This podcast is brought to you by Mate, high-speed internet with Aussie customer service.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in!
Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30 to 1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that, the morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Breakfast on FNR. It's the Tuesday edition. It's Players Day and we have a fan favourite joining us this morning. We will be speaking with Newcastle's Stephen Ugarkovic ahead of their first match of the season. It's an F3 derby for them. They had the week off this week, so we'll be looking forward to seeing what he says ahead of this one. I'm Athos Syrianos, he's Nick Debano, and you can contribute to the discussion and fun at any time by calling us on 03-9944-9999, SMS us on 0428-933-45, or on social media at FNR_radio, or comment below on the Facebook Live. We're going to preview Australia's World Cup qualifier against Chinese Taipei, as well as go through all the European action. But firstly, Nick, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Athos. Big, big week coming up. Obviously, as we said yesterday, really top of the agenda. Been a big weekend coming out of the A-League this week. But be interesting to hear from Stephen Ugarkovic in a couple moments. Obviously, Newcastle had the week off. First bye round in quite some time we've had here in the A-League. So an opportunity for Ugarkovic and his Newcastle Jets to get out the field this weekend when they go to Gosford. So they have to wait a little bit longer for that first home game. But a big F3 derby for them to kick it all off.
Not sure if you saw, but they're starting to light the fuse early, the Jets people, especially a few of the big names inside the club. We're talking Laurie McKenna and Joel Griffiths. They went and unfurled a big Newcastle tifo at the Central Coast Stadium.
Yeah, they did.
To sort of get things going before their FFA Cup match against Adelaide United, that semi-final. So great to see that rivalry already starting, because back in the day, some 10, 15 years ago, these two sides were playing off in a grand final, and it was a marquee fixture, the F3 derby. So we're hoping that it can become what it was back then. Steve Ugarkovic to join us very shortly. We will be seeing also throughout the hour who put Mayo in that new segment of ours, and we will be checking in on Malaga to see how they're going. I don't think they're faring too well. They did play over the international break. We'll also go through some of the European news. I think England have just had a big win.
Yeah, they have. So for those that have just woken up and want to hear some of the qualifying results, obviously that happened overnight, some big games, some big results. So Ukraine have officially stamped their place in Euro 2020 with a shock 2-1 win over Portugal. Well, I don't think it's actually too much of a shock anymore when you think about it, because they're a much better side than many think. But considering Portugal had 24 shots to Ukraine's 5, it's a solid 2-1 win for them. Obviously played in the Ukraine, meaning Portugal have to wait another week. Or another set of qualifiers. Two qualifiers did say England 6-0 over Bulgaria, but the game was marred by some racial taunts from the Bulgarian fans, meant the game was temporarily suspended.
It was.
And also the game between France and Turkey. Well, the French were up through Olivier Giroud at the 76th minute before Kaan Arian scored a late equaliser to make that group, well, just that little bit more tasty.
This is a game that you had your eye on yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You were telling everyone that this is one to look out for. And despite France being the world champions and the heavy favourites, Turkey have found a way to equalise. So what does this mean for France?
This means for France that this qualification campaign has not gone to plan whatsoever. They're going to have to battle for a little bit longer to stamp their place, but I don't think they'll have any problems getting the job done. They take on Moldova and Albania in their next two games. Well, for Turkey, they've got an important clash against Iceland, who are only 4 points behind, that game being played in Turkey before playing Andorra. So it shapes up to be a really, really exciting round of qualifiers in November.
And we will review all the European action a little later in the hour. But now, Nick, we must get to our first guest. He's one of Newcastle's top midfielders, and Ante Jukic, in his A-League preview for ESPN, described him as the league's best central midfielder. Stephen Ugarkovic, welcome to Breakfast on FNR.
Thank you guys for having me.
You guys are coming off a bye. Was it weird having the week off while the rest of the competition started?
No, not really. There was a lot of talk about it being a disadvantage, things like that. But it's, listen, everyone's going to have three byes, so ours just happened to be at the first week, and we just had some extra time to prepare for our first game.
Well, Stephen, Snick here, and while the bye was only temporary, do you think the players will appreciate just having that extra week of training under the belt heading into a big season ahead, obviously playing through the summer months?
Oh, I think it goes a bit of both ways. Pre-season is 3 months, so it's just an extra week onto that, but I think it's on the other side of it, boys are ready, waiting to go. So if you look at both sides, there's positives and negatives, so it's just, like I said, it's just when it comes, you're just going to deal with it then. So everyone has those three buys. So, yeah, it just happened to be our first round.
And your first game is an F3 derby. How is the team feeling ahead of the first match?
Yeah, it's not only the first game, it's a derby. Boys are always excited for the first game of the season, and for it to be a derby is just an extra bonus. And going down there, away trip, hopefully a lot of fans come down, the atmosphere should be good. They're coming off a 2-1 loss, but I thought personally they performed well, and they were a bit unlucky. So I think it's going to be a good game, and yeah, all the boys are ready to go and can't wait.
Yeah, and obviously this is a different Newcastle team. A lot of the same players that have been there over the past 2 years, but some new signings. Tell us a little bit about how they have adjusted to life in the Hunter.
Everyone's adjusted well. Even Arroyo doesn't speak much English, but you can see on the field he's adapted well. He's taken on the things he needs to, position-wise and within our structure, which is good. And all the other boys, like Fitzy, Matty Miller, they've been in the league. They've adapted very well as well. They're just they're smart players, and they're also great guys off the field. Everyone's really enjoying life here. We've all gelled pretty well. So now everyone's just, can't wait to get started.
And a few of the other signings include, where's Houlihan, who we know plenty about. What kind of things has he brought to the team?
Yeah, when he came in, he was a great experienced head, played in the Premier League and the Championship for so long, and coming from England and having that experience, he was someone personally I took a lot out of, just the way he trained and things in his game that I could pick up on, which can help me. But yeah, obviously copping that injury didn't help him. He's enjoying his life at his football. So he's just doing the right things now to get back on the field.
Speaking of injuries, you guys have a few players under an injury cloud again. It feels like it happens. It happened last season for you guys as well. But do you guys feel as though you're better positioned this year to handle these challenges, seeing as though you sort of were in the same position last year?
Yeah, injuries are a part of football, and I think we are better balanced within the squad we've got assembled this year. We've got more balance and depth around the park in other positions, which is a good sign. Boys are also, I believe personally, the fittest we've been. And I can say that for myself, probably the fittest I've been. So I think boys have been doing the right thing to get back on the field that are injured, and the boys that are on there are doing the right thing to stay there. And just the depth in the squad is looking good as well.
And Stephen, you guys missed out on finals last season. You had a bit of a late run. You got very close in the end after a bit of a slow start. But has that been a strong focus to make a return to the top six this season after the heights of 2018?
Yeah, as a club, we want to be known to be in the finals year in, each year sort of thing. And personally, having that first experience of being in the finals and getting to the grand final, that drives me personally. To get back in there and to do everything we can to get back in there as a club and give that back to the fans. So that's a big drive for us this year and a big goal. So we're looking to start strong, start fast and just put points on the board when we can.
Stephen Ugarkovic from the Newcastle Jets is our guest this morning on Breakfast on FNR. And Stephen, last season your stats were through the roof. You played a lot of football. Did you feel it was your best season yet?
It was a bit of a mixed bag for me last year. I personally felt my stats were similar to the year before when we did make the grand final. So I felt as a whole and as a team that was my best year. But I want to put together a year this year that's going to top that. And I want to play week in, week out and just be a real presence this year and keep on from there.
And Stephen, you've represented Australia at the under-23 level. Have you had much contact with any of the national team coaches about a potential call-up anytime soon?
No, nothing at all. But that, yeah, that's always a dream in the back of every footballer's head. If they don't say it, don't say that. That's a bit of a lie. But yeah, that's a dream of mine. I'm sure of any footballer. So if that comes knocking, yeah, you approach it that way. But no, there hasn't been any approach. So that's just the way football is, and you just got to keep performing and performing on the park, and things happen from there.
Well, you'll have your first crack at the new season on the weekend against the Central Coast Mariners. And a few of your colleagues, namely Laurie McKenna and Joel Griffiths, have taken it upon themselves to light a fuse ahead of this derby. They unfurled a big Newcastle tifo at the Mariners ground. Did the players know much about this at the time?
No, I first saw it was on social media. So that was pretty funny and interesting that how they did that. And I think it's good for the... good for the league and the build-up to get these things going, because I feel it can add a bit of spark to the league. And, I really liked what they did. It was good to see that and bring a bit of emotion back into it as well.
And, Stephen, one of your, ex-teammates, he's still technically a teammate of yours, but Joey Champness, he's headed off to the US to follow a bit of a music dream. Can you tell us a little bit about how he's going? Have you had much contact with him since he's left?
Not really, actually. Well, I sent him a message when he left, so we were happy for him. That's something he wants to pursue. He's at a point in his career where he wanted to give that a crack and risk it. That's good on him, sort of thing. And if it pays off, it pays off. So I haven't really had much contact with him, but yeah, hopefully he's doing well and he's chasing his dream. And yeah, good on him for giving it a crack.
Certainly wishing him all the best. Stephen Ugarkovich from the Newcastle Jets is our guest this morning on Breakfast on FNR. And Stephen, externally looking into the A-League this season, I must say it does feel a bit different. A lot's been said about it being a year of transition with a new team and an independent A-League. Does it feel different? Do the players sense that it feels a bit different heading into this season, or is it just sort of business as usual every year?
I think it feels a little bit more... televised and promoted a bit, I feel personally, which is good. So I feel a lot more interviews are going on the fields and things like that, and more access, which I quite like, because it gives more exposure to the fans watching at home and on the TV and things like that. So I think that's one thing I've noticed, which is a change for the better. But other than that, I feel it's that added team thing there. So Western Melbourne coming in, so we've just got to obviously meeting three buyers and one less game, so that doesn't change too much, because last year having the international windows, it's really the same. So it's just, yeah, I think that side of things with the cameras and things has changed for the better, which is good, and yeah, other than that, it's feeling very similar.
Are you optimistic where the league's at the moment and where it's heading?
Yeah, definitely, because when you look at the players that still come to the A-League and the coaches like Robbie Fowler, you've got Diamante, you've got Kone coming in. They're big players. They played in big leagues in Europe, and for them to want to come out here and continue playing at still a fair level, 32, Kone, that's still a good age for him to be playing his top football. So I think that's a good sign and good exposure for all of us in the league and in the league itself.
And Stephen, you spent a bit of time in Croatia earlier in your career. Tell us a bit about that and what some of the things you took out of that experience.
Yeah, that as well. Being in Croatia was tough but rewarding at the same time, being only 17 when I went over and sort of not knowing the language, just risking everything and just going over for a trial sort of thing, and then end up spending 4 years there was great, and going through the ups and downs. So there was times where I hadn't been paid for a whole year, and that I felt shaped me on and off the field, because it's sort of a survival mode over there where it's football is life and death. And I think I took that into my life and taking it on board in a positive way, whereas I was that sort of thing. We were fighting relegation, wasn't getting paid, and that was sort of rock bottom as it could get in the football world. So anything from there is really a positive, but that, I think, changed my personality and my outlook on football and life.
Well, Stephen, we must thank you very much for joining us here on Breakfast on FNR. Good luck for this Saturday, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to speak to you again very soon.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me, and enjoy the rest of the day.
That was Newcastle Jets midfielder Stephen Ugarkovich joining us here on Breakfast on FNR. Really good insight into his current career in the A-League for the Newcastle Jets. but also his football overseas playing in Croatia, speaking a little bit about some of the challenges he faced having to play in a foreign country. But good to hear from him ahead of a massive F3 derby and a massive season for Newcastle as they look to get back to the lofty heights where they once were a couple seasons ago in the grand final.
It's very rare that Ernie Merrick misses out on the finals, and it's even rarer that he misses out twice in a row.
Yeah.
So they could be a real dark horse. Stephen Ugarkovich, if you missed that, you can head over to our Wooshka or SoundCloud a little later on in the day for that interview in full. But one of the key takings, one of the key things that he said was that this Newcastle Jets side is as fit as he's ever seen it.
That's pretty scary.
That is pretty scary. And they're coming off a bye. They do have a few injuries. Wes Houlihan, the new recruit, is out.
Irish
Kane
Jesus.
Shepherd is also a big out for them. He had a fantastic start to the professional to his professional career last year. He, of course, came from Avondale in Victoria's NPL, and he scored a few big goals for the Jets, who were without Roy O'Donovan for the first half of last season. But you do feel as though they've got that experience. It could have been a case of, you know, a step back to take two steps forward. And again, it's a fairly open league. You just can't predict where these teams are going to finish.
I think a lot of people have already written off the Jets again, which is one thing you can't do in the A-League is rule out anybody or basically, you know, say that anyone's no chance of getting through. But I think based off their new signings and based off their team not having probably the same depth as a lot of the other sides or the ability to spend as much, a lot of people probably are writing them off for those reasons. But I can't see why. I still say there's a reason as to why Newcastle fans can be somewhat optimistic. It's still a very, very solid team when they've got everyone out in the park. So it might be another case of a slow start for them. If they can get a win against the Mariners in a big, big derby for them, it'll help them put them in really good stead heading into the season.
Well, I think that's the important thing this season. Injuries with injuries and perhaps a bit of a lack of depth, they really need to get the points on the board early. So then when these players come back, because that's what they failed to do last season. They sort of fell behind the eight ball.
Too much.
And then it's not hard to get back up in the A-League, but they just left it a bit too late last season. Even though you and Josh Parrish had an interesting bet going, where you were adamant that they were going to make the finals.
Well, they were very close. They were very, very close in the end. They got within, at one point, it was about 2 points. And there was this one game where they played Melbourne City at home, and they rested everyone. And Josh was like, yep, see you later. The bet's done. I've won.
And I think they beat them.
And they beat them 3-1. And so that turned everything around in its head. But then they had a few bad results at the end of the season, which cost them, in particular, that loss at home to the Mariners. And then from there, the Jets were a bit too far off. But they put up a really, really good fight at the end of last season, something they can probably go into next year and say, all right, well, things might not have gone exactly the plan, but there's a lot to take out of it. Because where they were, where they entered the season, they had a period where they went 5 games unbeaten. And after that, unfortunately, that was when things really unraveled for them. They won 3 of their last 5 games as well, but there was that period in between December and January. They didn't win a game in 5, and it took them also 4 games to win their first game of the season as well. So they can't afford to have lapses where they're not going to go, they're going to go long periods of time without winning a game. Last season was different because the fixturing was all over the place. Nernie Mack spoke a lot about that.
They copped it bad.
Yes.
Last season.
And they had to deal with Asian Champions League last season, having to travel to Kashima. They had just a lot of different things happening, and their squad isn't as deep as what some of the other sides are in this competition. The teams that do play the Champions Leagues, like your Victories and your Sydneys, who have a lot of depth at their disposal. This is a team that don't necessarily have the resources at the same level as some of those other teams. So I do think it's going to be another tough year for them. I predict that they're going to miss the finals, but I'd love to see them shock me because I do love how they go about it.
Well, if you're a Newcastle Jets fan and want to let us know what your thoughts are ahead of the season and if you're going down to the F3 derby, let us know. 03-99-94-99-99. Drop us a line on social media at FN_radio or on the Facebook Live.
Well, Josh is asking me on the Facebook Live right now, Nick, did you ever pay up on that bet? Well, to answer that question for you, Josh, Gap Gap, the Chinese restaurant next to us, was closed for a good 3 months, so I wasn't able to during that time.
But they're open now.
They're open now, but Josh is never in the studio when I am.
And there are several Chinese restaurants in Melbourne which you could have taken Josh out to.
Yeah, but it's Gap Gap. It's like saying, okay, well, I owe you Macca's, but I'm going to buy you a burger from Hungry Jack's. If you want Macca's and you want a quarter pounder, you're not going to go buy someone a Whopper.
No, that's fair.
So, you know, I'm not going to go take him to another place. But yes, Josh, I will pay for your bow eventually.
You guys have the lightning round on Friday after the lightning round.
You know, if we stick around, maybe.
He'll be sticking around, don't worry.
He'll be here all day, but look, we've got busy lives.
Okay.
Sorry, Josh. But yeah, look, opportunity comes to get your hands on
the bow. I think you need to put
bow.
Some mayo on that.
Yeah, well, that segues perfectly into who puts the mayo on. And I think I probably could put myself on that after what I just said. But looking at what put mayo on. Now, this morning when I thought about it, I thought at first, all right, Harvey Elliott would be perfect. Because Harvey Elliott, I didn't really do too much research into this other than the fact that he got banned for something. And I thought, okay, something about Harry Kane. I thought maybe this would be something when he was much younger. And I think we forget he's only 16 years old. So in reality, it's not like he's 22 and he did it when he was 16. He's actually 16 right now.
So for those who don't know, he is one of the young stars in Liverpool's team. He's one of the youngest players to
16.
Debut in the Premier League. And when Liverpool defeated Tottenham, he posted a video of himself making a bit of fun of Harry Kane. And
he's called him some interesting derogatory words.
He's since been banned for 14 days and copped a £400 fine. So he's copped his whack. So I think it's fair that we keep him off the Mayo list.
Yeah, I think when I watched the video this morning, I saw like, ooh, okay.
Bit dangerous.
Fair enough. Probably shouldn't have said that, Mr. Elliott. But to be honest, in terms of putting some Mayo on it, like just in terms of, you know, just some people just thinking about in the broader community, I think that like this is something that I think we need to all remember is that I think a lot of people are jumping off teams straight away.
Okay.
I was looking at comments on Facebook after the Melbourne Derby on Saturday night. Now, I was looking at mainly the Victory fans. And some Victory fans already are saying, what is this? What is this? This was terrible. This was the worst derby I've ever seen. This was this, this was that. Yeah, it wasn't the greatest game. But at the end of the day, it's round one.
You're not going to get great games every week.
Exactly. That's what happens in any sport. Like, you know, you can't, as we always say, you can't force entertainment into sport, but you can't make every game to be an absolute cracker. Like, if the derby didn't live up to it, at the end of the day, these are two teams feeling each other out. It's early stages in the season. Yeah, you can be frustrated. Yeah, you can be like, okay, my team didn't really perform, but come on, it's round one. If next week Victory come out and put a brilliant performance in against the Wanderers, everyone's going to forget about it.
What I was very pleased about with the derby. Mm. Generally, the derbies are all very good. It's the off-the-field stuff that doesn't feel special. Generally, the derbies on the field are fantastic games.
Well,
but if you were at the derby and if you saw it on TV, you saw that they did everything they could to make it feel like a big occasion.
Yeah,
the light show at the start.
Fireworks.
And it was a 33,000 crowd. You and I had this debate yesterday. I think, given the lack of promotion and marketing, that it was a solid crowd. The City fans sold out their away bay for the first time since 2015, so
that's
a bit
good,
of optimism heading out of Melbourne City.
Yeah, but what will City get this weekend when they play Adelaide?
Well, that remains to be seen. Sunday night, get down, City fans, at Amy Park, first home match of the season. I agree. On the field, it wasn't great, but we have to remember that it is only round one. There were several players not playing. Tim Hoogland was on crutches before that game. Robbie Cruz wasn't playing. Jamie McLaren was overseas. So, again, I agree with you. Victory fans have certainly put mayo on that. They've been putting mayo on it for quite some time. They had jumped off the Kevin Muscat bandwagon, then he went and delivered a championship.
Yeah, exactly.
So there you go.
Exactly.
Very well said, Nick.
Well, just as I just my thing is, just the number one thing you just have to remember is that at the end of the day, it's still just round one. Everyone just calma, have a cafe. Honestly, and just everyone just needs to relax because end of the day, I understand. This is my big tripe in terms of sport in general and about how people act. Because fans of sport can be very fickle. That is the one thing we must remember. And I don't mean to have digs at everybody here, but what I see a lot is when teams are losing, when your team's losing and you've lost one game or you're not playing too well, when people jump off the bandwagon and start to bash the team, I can't stand it. I cannot stand it. The one thing that I like is when you've got fans that stick through it, because you're not always going to win premierships.
You could be critical, but not over the top.
You're not always going to be at the top of the ladder.
Be realistic.
Exactly. So when a team's struggling, you have to understand that. And I'm saying this from a fan of AC Milan and Wigan, and I complain all the time about Milan. But at the end of the day, well, the one thing that I really appreciate about Milan fans are they always stick with the club. They complain, but they still come to games. They still get up early, especially the fans down here. Shout out to Milan Club Melbourne. They still get down and watch the games. Wigan fans as well. We don't get big crowds, but we're a passionate bunch. Still get around the team. So at the end of the day, just if you're a Victory fan out there or any fan out there that is frustrated and getting really angry early in the season because your team didn't perform, just wait. Give it a few weeks. If it starts to become consistent, you can start to get worried. But if it's early stage, round one,
and
come on.
The Victory fans are fantastic. They're one of the most passionate in the league. They sell out stadiums if they're winning or not. I'm very confident that the Victory will get back up to those heights we saw last season and in years gone by. Nick, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll look at some of the other results in Europe and preview Australia's match against Chinese Taipei.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in!
Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon!
Oh, 30 to 1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that, the morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
It is 24 past 8, 15th of October 2019, FNR, Football Nation Radio. Breakfast here today. Nick Dabino, Athos Sirianis, taking you right through to 9 a.m. And as we saw this morning, there were a lot of big European qualifiers. But before we get to that, if you missed our earlier interview with Newcastle Jets midfielder Stephen Ugarkovic, head over to our Wooshka and SoundCloud a little bit later to catch up with that. A really, really interesting interview with a potential Socceroos bolter. Let's talk a little bit about the European qualifiers. We had Peter come through in the Facebook comments saying, any injury report regarding Euro qualifiers, EPL or La Liga? At the moment, I haven't got any news of any injuries this morning.
Thankfully.
Thank God. But I do have the results. And there were some huge results this morning in terms of how things are going to play out now in the race to get into the Euros. Because it's heating up. There's one match day to go after tomorrow. But this morning, there were games which really have now shaped up how things are going to go into the final days. So Albania 4-0 over Moldova. Iceland 2-0 over Andorra. They're looking to go to their third straight major tournament in Iceland. But I think they may have to go through the playoffs. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Kosovo, they keep their hopes alive of a dream run. They're in a great position at least to make the playoffs. They're still alive to make the top two in Group A, but it's going to be very difficult if they can knock England or the Czech Republic out.
Yeah.
And look, it's a good win for them over Montenegro, a very, very solid result for them. They're playing some beautiful football at the moment, have one of the most passionate coaches in the business. England 6-0 over Bulgaria on the road, doubles to Ross Barkley and Raheem Sterling. Really, the big talking point wasn't on the field, but we'll talk about that in a sec. Serbia, still a chance. 2-1 win over Lithuania on the road, double from Alexander Mitrovic. Ukraine are now in Euro 2020, led by Andrei Shevchenko. 5-24 in Portugal's favour. They had 10 men, the Ukraine, but they hung on to a really, really solid victory. So great to see the Ukraine back in a major tournament.
What a story, led by one of their greatest players. Nick, when Shevchenko and legends get the appointment, especially as big as this, we've seen it go pear-shaped.
But this has almost rejuvenated Ukrainian football, because Ukrainian football, not long ago, well, in 2006, they made a quarterfinal of the World Cup. They got knocked out by the eventual world champions, Italy.
They didn't make to the 2010 World
Cup.
They
didn't make a major tournament until Euro 2012 when they hosted it, and that was when they went out in the group stage, and their coach, Andrei Shevchenko, has got a famous double in that tournament, but they went to Euro 2016, also went out in the group stage. So they've had success getting to the Euros. It's just never been back getting to the World Cup. They'll be at the Euros again, but the way they're playing at the moment, with some of these guys like Zinchenko, who's starting every week for Man City, you've got Malinovsky, who's playing some beautiful football for Atalanta, and Andrei Yarmolenko, who you know very well from his time at West Ham.
Back from an ACL.
Back from his ACL injury, so good to see they got the job done. But the big talking point of that is Cristiano Ronaldo scored his 700th career goal from the spot. An incredible feat. We wonder what he could get to by the time he hangs up the boots.
What's a realistic number for Ronaldo to finish his career on?
You'll get to 800. Definitely gets 800.
So he's got 700 career goals, so that's international and Club football. Unfortunately, Portugal doesn't have the luxury of playing, you know, the Solomon Islands and Fiji
He has to. Well, Portugal's next two games, he could really bolster up that tally. They take on Lithuania and Luxembourg. So if he can score a couple in that one, and if he can feast on the minnows, the smaller Italian teams would help for him.
He's also playing Champions League.
Yep,
as well.
Coppa Italia.
He will go to the Euros.
He'll go to the Euros. He'll probably get close to winning the Golden Boot in Serie A. He will get to 800 goals probably in the next 3-4 years. So I think there's a chance of getting 800, 900 or 1,000 is really pushing. I said 900 off air, but thinking about it, it's going to be a real big push.
It depends where he finishes his career. If he goes to a lower league and looks to increase that tally, or if he wants to end his career on a high. I feel as though Ronaldo, I know a lot of people accuse him of being, you know, selfish, but I think he'd want to end his career at the highest possible standard. So he won't be looking for 1,000.
But if he's like a certain Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who has gone to the Galaxy in 38, has scored 30 goals in 29 games,
true,
with that sort of ratio, goal-to-game ratio, there is no reason why he can't get close. Zlatan actually, in comparison, has scored 473 at club level, including 62 at international level, taking that just over 530.
Over 500 goals.
So, and so there'll be teams that'll be looking at Zlatan because he's actually out of contract in December. So it'll be interesting to see whether he stays in the MLS, whether he moves on, whether the A-League make another ambitious push for him.
For Zlatan.
I don't really know. No reason why they can't.
Like, and we've got that marquee fund. They're yet to really splash the cash this year. We know Honda was that big player, but Zlatan
would be the biggest marquee to ever come to the A-League.
100%.
So it'd be absolutely huge. But the other European qualifier, which had massive ramifications in Group H, was the world champions France held to a 1-1 draw at home by Turkey, who have been incredible this tournament. Now, Turkey only had 5 shots for the whole game. They managed to get one late through Kaan Adıyan. Olivier Giroud opened the scoring for the French, and the French, who had a few players, they didn't, N'Golo Kante did not feature at all in this game. An interesting decision made by Didier Deschamps, going with Tolisso and Matuidi in midfield, but also going with Wissam Ben Yedder up front. So a different French look, obviously, there without Hugo Lloris for the rest of the season. There's doubts whether he'll go to the Euros at all, meaning Steve Mandanda was the man in goals. Alphonse Areola is also in contention. But for Turkey, another solid result. They've been very good this qualification campaign. They were at the last Euros. They have not probably performed to the level that a lot of people would have seen Turkey, because they've got a lot of talented players in that squad. But right now, they are on top of Group H. But Group H, heading into the final two games, Turkey and France on 19 points, Iceland on 15, making it really, really close, because Turkey play Iceland next. Iceland wins, there's still a chance of going through as one of the teams that miss out, that don't have to go through that playoff phase. While France, it should be straightforward for the world champions, as we said, Moldova and Albania in their next two games. So they should be able to stamp their ticket. So the teams now that have qualified for Euro 2020, we've got Italy, Belgium, Russia, Poland. We've also got, just quickly scrolling through, we've got the Ukraine. So tomorrow, there's some big games as well coming to you. So we've got Finland versus Armenia, second versus third in that final group. A lot on the line there. We've got the Faroe Islands versus Malta, the battle of the minnows. Who's going to get a win between the Faroe Islands and Malta? Faroe Islands, as we know.
Back Malta.
Look, I'm part Maltese, so we'll get behind the Maltese on the road. Sweden play Spain. This game is huge. Spain need a win to qualify. Sweden get themselves a result. They get one step closer to just kicking away a little bit from Romania. They're 1 point behind them, the Romanians, who play Norway. And Norway have not been an easy team to beat. And that game is being played in Romania later on tomorrow. Gibraltar versus Georgia. Georgia are certainties to play at least in a playoff, which is good signs for the minnows. Greece versus Bosnia. Now, Greece, they're
in a bit of trouble.
They probably are. They need a miracle now to make it to the Euros, unless somehow they fall into the playoff bracket if things go their way. Bosnia, they are a good chance now after a big win in their last game against Finland to get back up there, considering Finland and Armenia play each other next. Big chance for Bosnia to get back to the top two. Italy travel to Liechtenstein, so you expect to see Italy maybe play some of the depth players in this game, considering they're already through. Israel, Latvia, and a huge game in Switzerland. They take on the Irish, who are on top of their group. Switzerland third. Now, Ireland at the moment, they are actually, if they get themselves a win tomorrow, they qualify for the Euros. So if they win, they'll go 7 points clear of Switzerland, who play two more games. It'll be a big hammer blow to Switzerland, because then they'll have to go through the playoffs, because they'll be potentially 4 points behind Denmark. So there's a lot of tedious things at the moment, but the Irish, they've been so close so many times to actually qualifying for major tournaments. They got to the last Euros, but this time they could potentially not leave it to the final day, which for Ireland, it seems like it always comes down to that final game. They leave it so late to qualify or to miss out. So it'd be great to see the Irish get back into a major tournament once more.
Yes, they're like a university student who works 4 part-time jobs and wants to leave his assignment to the last minute. This is Breakfast on FNR. We will touch on Australia's game against Chinese Taipei very shortly. I think I mispronounced the name of their country. We have Tony come through. Interesting pronunciation of Chinese Taipei, as in former Socceroo and Footscray Just player Ernie Tapai. He'd be honoured there is an international team in his name.
Good that we got that one cleared up.
And he's been on the program. He's been on the Pioneers as well.
Well, we had there was a talk about how do you say, is it Nepal or Nepal? And we've worked out it was actually Nepal, going to Simon Hill last week, who's also just joined Twitter.
Welcome back, Simon.
Welcome to the Twitter sphere, Mr. Hill. So good to see that we've actually been had that one straightened out, because it's a bit of egg on our
and
face.
And it's Chinese Taipei as well.
You stuffed it up again,
I've stuffed
mate.
It up twice.
You are not having a good morning, mate.
But George Dineakin would be very disappointed in
but
me.
But as well, we've got World Cup qualifiers tonight. A lot of big games, especially in Asia, in the race to obviously the early stages of qualifying. But there are some massive games. One in particular that just caught my eye. North Korea versus South Korea.
Derby.
7:30 in Pyongyang. I believe this game is being played. I've just got confirmation. Yes, this actually is being played in Pyongyang at the Kim Il-sung Stadium, a massive stadium over there. Obviously, those two teams are top of their group at the moment. For some of the other big Asian nations, we've got Thailand taking on the UAE, Palestine taking on Saudi Arabia, Japan take on Tajikistan. We've got Syria taking on Guam. In our group, Jordan take on Nepal. Iran take on Bahrain. That's a very difficult game there for Bahrain and also for Iran. The Asian champions, Qatar, take on Oman in that contest as well. So some games which they're not going to be as straightforward for some of the big sides, but for us Australians at 10:40 tonight over in Chinese Taipei in Taiwan. A big game for Australia.
What do you want to see out of Australia?
Well, I want them to win, of course, but yes. The one thing as well I want to see is just a little bit more cutting edge in the final third. Just they were, even though they scored 5 goals last week, they need to show a little bit more because they just show difficulties in breaking down Nepal. And Chinese Taipei have conceded 4 goals in 2 games. They haven't won a game just yet, but they're not as, based off results so far, they're going to be just a little bit more, I think, resolute at the back because Nepal have conceded 12 goals in 3.
They only lost 2-1 to Jordan, something Australia
they need to be
knows
careful.
All too well about. Jordan is our bogey side.
Can't take him too
they
lightly.
They made the 1960 and 68 Asian Cup semifinals. It's been a few years between drinks for them. I'd love to see Brandon Borello partner up with Jamie McLaren. Mm-hmm. I want to see our strikers get their confidence back up and start scoring again on the international scene. That game kicking off tonight, 10:30 p.m. before the players return home to clubland. Now, Nick, just before we move away from the international scene, one of the big stories from today was England's 6-0 win over Bulgaria. Now, the reason why this has become such a significant story is the match had to be stopped twice due to the Harry Kane approaching the referee as a result of the English players hearing racist chants. As a result, UEFA put up a message on the screen which said that the match very well could be abandoned and the English players actually threatened to walk off. This was something they organised before the game. Harry Kane spoke to his teammates and addressed it that if they do hear any chants that are racist or any taunting, that they will threaten to walk off. And they've answered their critics by winning 6-0, but of course the game has been marred by those events there.
Well, so this is basically what happened based off the occurrence that happened over in Sofia in the Bulgarian capital. So Tyrone Mings on his England debut was apparently the first player to report it. And it was also directed at Raheem Sterling and Marcus Rashford, who were all on the pitch at the same time, with monkey chants while the Bulgarian fans were also shown doing Nazi salutes. So that was caught on camera.
That's what's been reported.
Yep. So that's exactly why the game was partially postponed, just was stopped for a little while. The England players had every right to abandon that game. Every right to. I think Bulgaria deserves some sort of sanction for this. I think that they need to be punished because this is shocking. The only way that the thing is, it seems like it's happening so much now within football. We're seeing it. We saw it in Serie A earlier this season.
And this is bigger than football.
Yeah, exactly. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. This is still happening. It's 2019 now.
And it's just a small pocket of fans. We're not having a go at
the
everyone
entire
in the
fan
stadium.
Base.
It generally is only a small contingent of people who just ruin it for everyone else. And we really need to, as a community and as a sport, really need to stamp this out.
But you know what makes this even worse? I'm just reading now in the Telegraph that the Bulgarians were already suffering a partial stadium closure due to previous incidents in the same manner.
It didn't look that full, the stadium.
So why hasn't UEFA enacted a full stadium ban? I understand it's not everyone. Play in front of no one for the rest of their qualification campaign. They've got two games to go. I don't know whether they're playing there. I'll quickly
they
just fact check.
They've been knocked out already. So
they're not going to be playing at the Euros. And I think there needs to be some sort of sanction. They play their final game against the Czech Republic actually at home in November. After that game, totally needs to just be in front of no one.
And FIFA.
Closed doors.
FIFA is a very powerful organization, UEFA FIFA. So if they really want to stamp this out and send a message, they will ban Bulgaria, play in front of empty stadiums, have them
not
participate.
For empty stadiums for quite
some time. If it gets worse, ban them from future tournaments.
Yep, and then they have to really find out who they were. If possible, identify who they are and ban them for life. This is something that needs to change in all sports, somewhere where this should not be tolerated anywhere, that if you get caught, you're done. You're done. That is the way to set the precedent. It is no more about, you know, just small little sanctions. Because let's be real, right? If it was a partial stadium closure, what happens if they play in front of closed doors and then they come back when they have their next lot of international friendlies or World Cup qualifiers and they do it again? Because they'll be like, oh, it's just one game. We can't qualify for the Euros. Some of those fans, you know, that's what might go through their head. So if you could stamp out who they are and you can ban them for life, if they have the knowledge of finding out who they are and they can identify them. This goes beyond just UEFA and FIFA. This goes to the Bulgarian police authorities too, to find out who they are and ban them. In any game around all of the world in world football, if you racially abuse a player, you should be banned for life.
Of course,
anyone, yeah.
This is far bigger than football. The England players clearly understood that and they were happy to walk off and abandon the game, which I think if you did that before halftime, it finishes 0-0. So it just goes to show that, you know, they're a very tight-knit group and didn't really matter for them what the result was. Very well put there, Nick, though. We will have our second guest join us very quickly. We will be speaking with Michael Morcos, the organiser of the 2019 Coptic Cup, which was played over the weekend and won by Sydney. So we will get to him very shortly. But now, Nick, it was a bit disappointing for my boys, Malaga, on the weekend. We are going to enter Malaga watch. They played over the international break, and after their second season in the Segunda Division, the second division in Spain, they have lost to the top of the table, Cadiz, and sees them now sitting second bottom in the Spanish second division. They've only won one game. Malaga really need to get their stuff together.
Yeah.
It's not looking good.
It's not. It's not great. It's not great for Malaga, a team that wasn't playing Champions League long ago. Ah, there, Malaga.
Bloody Malaga.
Honestly, like, come on. Like, get you. I'm not going to say it because there's no.
Come on. You need to.
Get it together.
Get it together. I think they were knocked out of the playoffs to go into the first division last season. So the wheels have fallen off for Malaga. So they really need to get going and return to the top flight of Spain and return to European football. They were playing Champions League a few years ago.
What's going on there?
Unbelievable.
What is going on there? Whoever's in charge,
whoever's in charge of Malaga.
Just get it together. Like, seriously, I don't know what's going on. Just if you need to clear the squad out, start again. I don't know. But this team need to start getting results from somewhere. Just get a few draws on the board. Like, just get up the table.
They need some confidence.
Yeah. I reckon they just need to survive now.
Yep, like survival.
Survive.
Start for next season.
Yep, rebuild. Total rebuild. Play for draft. Well, there's no draft picks in
Come on, no, you can't do that.
Segunda, but they are right now in an absolute hole. They are really, really struggling. But you know what's funny? They're actually down the bottom with Deportivo La Coruña, who are also a historically successful Spanish club that weren't playing in Europe not too long ago. So they are right down in the dumps. So for Deportivo and Malaga, get it together. Get up the table. Like, honestly, you guys
the competition started 10 weeks ago. Where are you?
I know. Well, come on. It's now October. Like, seriously. So I don't know what's going on there, but they're really, really falling behind the eight ball.
Well, Nick, on that note, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, Michael Morcos from the Coptic Cup will be joining us. This is Breakfast on FNR.
On the crossbar! And it doesn't go in!
Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30-1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
Ah! Ha 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 ha! You love rainbows and ponds and things like that, the morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back. It's 44 minutes past 8.
Here. 88 past 8.
Not quite. We've had a bit of a Malaga moment there. But it's Breakfast on FNR. We've had a very good show so far. We spoke to Stephen Yagakovich earlier in the program. You can catch that interview in full on SoundCloud.
You brought the music down and you started blasting it again, mate. What are you doing?
I'm all over the shop today.
Are you all right, mate?
No, I've mispronounced Chinese Taipei.
You've said 8 past 44 or 44 past 88. You've fade down the music and then you started blasting it again and everything else, mate. Like, come on, get it together. You need to get it together.
You know who has got it together?
Who?
Our next guest, who will be on the line shortly, Michael Morcos.
Yeah, good on Michael Morcos.
He organised the 2019 Coptic Cup.
Yeah.
Now, to give you a bit of context, the Coptic Cup is a tournament that's been running for a few years now, which involves Coptic teams from all around Australia, and they all get together once a year.
Yep.
And play in this tournament.
They put on an absolute fiesta down there, and it was good to see them out in Darabin. You were down there calling the game with Josh Parrish, and good to see Sydney come away with the win.
Yes, Sydney came out with the win in what was a terrific festival of football over the 2 days. And joining us now to chat all about it is one of the event organisers, Michael Morcos. Michael, thank you for joining us this morning.
Morning, boys. How are you going?
Very well.
Fantastic.
Very well, thank you. Tell us about the Coptic Cup and what happened over the weekend.
So it's the fifth time that we've had this tournament. This is the second time we've had it in Melbourne. So biggest one we've had so far. We had 14 teams come into this tournament this year. For the first time ever, we had Perth involved. We've also, for the first time as well, had a ladies tournament this year as well.
And tell us how it all comes together, because teams from all around Australia, we had Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, Canberra represented, and it's a fantastic effort that everyone can come down for the weekend and get together and really enjoy a fantastic time.
Yeah, so being part of the Coptic Orthodox Church in Australia, we've got a little WhatsApp group where a few football organisers get in there, so one from each state, and we just make sure that we try and organise, you know, who gets to host and who's organising it, and then those teams that haven't been involved before, we've had a couple guys try and get in touch with people, so people from Perth, and next year we've also got a team from Tasmania who's going to join us at the Sydney competition in 2020.
Well, that's incredible, Mickey. And tell us a little bit about Sunday. Really, really exciting day of action. And tell us a little bit about how it all unfolded in the end.
Yeah, an awesome 2 days of football, really. I can tell you a lot of the players are feeling a little worse for wear today and yesterday. But look, Saturday started off with a bang. We started at 9 a.m, so we had the girls kick off at 9 a.m. and from there, the weather was unbelievable, and Sydney did lose their first game, which was a bit surprising out of the tournament. So everyone was a bit shocked at that when they lost to the Melbourne B team 2-1, but they just went stronger and stronger from there and went on Sunday to win their semi-final in extra time 2-1 and go on to win the final 3-1 against the Melbourne Gideon side.
So this is the second time it's been hosted in Melbourne. And when you guys all get together and the teams travel, what's that like? Because I'd imagine it'd be a fantastic opportunity for everyone to really get to know each other and to bond.
It is. Like, we had a big dinner on the Saturday night all together, and it's really good just to bond together as a community and learn about a bit each other. So this year we had guys from Canberra, Perth, Sydney, Adelaide, all get together, and obviously the Melbourne people, and even having the girls around this year as well just made the atmosphere a lot more lively, and it was just good to see. The biggest tournament we've had so far, 14 teams, and we're looking at growing that in the near future, but being our fifth tournament. We can't wait, and even adding other sports in the near future if that's possible.
Michael Morcos joins us now on the line, one of the event organisers from the 2019 Coptic Cup.
Mickey, other sports, what are we looking at?
I think the Sydney guys were talking about basketball next year.
Wow.
As well as soccer. So, we're trying to build it as much as we can. And obviously we all know how much community and sport can help everybody just grow together and learn a little bit more about each other. And sport is the way of bringing people together.
And it was Sydney who did win. That would be the ideal weekend to travel interstate with a group of your mates and go on and win a football tournament.
100%. I think it's their third time actually out of the five tournaments to take the plaque home. They've been the team to beat over the last few years. So we're hoping, we're getting our team together already and looking forward to travelling to Sydney next year and bringing it back home.
Sounds great, Mickey. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning to chat all about the Coptic Cup, and we look forward to see where this tournament grows in the future.
Just wanted to say a massive thank you to FNR as well for coming out on Sunday. Everyone loved it, everyone enjoyed it, and we look forward to having you guys part of the Coptic Cup in the future as well. So thank you very much.
It was our pleasure. That was Michael Morcos, one of the event organisers for the 2019 Coptic Cup. It was a sensational day at Darabin yesterday. Many thanks to everyone who put on a terrific show.
Yeah, I'm a bit gutted it couldn't get down on the day. But, you know, it sounded like it was good fun. But just reading some tweets that have come through in the meantime about from the England game, in particular from Raheem Sterling, who has spoken on Twitter in the meantime. So he, first of all, he responded to a tweet from Piers Morgan who said, "Brilliant goal by Sterling. No sweeter way to stuff it up, these racist Bulgaria fans. Typical Piers Morgan, than for a black England player to destroy their team with his sublime talent." So interesting that he was actually able to weigh in on that. And Sterling responded saying, "Delightful," with a gif of, I believe that's Ainsley, the famous chef.
Yes.
And then so he actually went back and he found a tweet that the BBC Sport did back on October, which was actually yesterday, that the Bulgarian coach, Krasimir Balakov, had accused England of having a bigger racism problem than Bulgaria. So he responded saying, "Not sure about this one, Chief," which is fair enough. He turned around and fired back about that one. And Raheem Sterling then tweeted again moments later saying, "Feeling sorry for Bulgaria to be represented by such," won't say the word, "in their stadium. Anyway, 6-0 and we go back home. At least did our job. Safe travel to our fans. You guys did well." And with an emoji of just a bit of this.
Yeah, there were 3,400 English fans and they travel very well, the three Lions supporters. They follow their team through thick and thin. I think for many of them, life peaked at the 2018 World Cup.
It
in that semi-final when they went a goal up.
Yep, but unfortunately for their sake, they just didn't get the job done.
But they rectified that loss last week. That loss last week. They rectified it.
They lost against the Czech Republic last week.
And they've rectified it, I said. They won today.
About they rectified the World Cup.
No, they've rectified the loss from last week.
They're back
on the winners list.
Yeah, and, but how much can you read into a win against Bulgaria?
Well, how much can you read into your first loss in 10 years?
Your first
World Cup qualification loss in 10 years.
That you can read a lot into that. You lost against the Czech Republic. Australia beat the Czech Republic in the Czech Republic.
Not in a competitive game, though.
Yeah, but England are England. England are supposed to be at the peak at the moment.
I don't think you can read too much
England
into
played
that.
Terribly last week. Terribly.
Teams play terribly all the time. It is football. Anything can happen. The Czech are a very good team.
Still, though, for England's sake, that is not a very good result to lose against the Czech Republic, and anyone could say that. The players they put out in the field, and it's been the big tripe of England fans in that game, they were playing guys that are out of form at club level.
Why is that?
Because I don't know whether it comes down to whether Gareth Southgate doesn't trust the other bunch of players coming through or whatever it is, but you got to play who's in form. I don't care if he's playing for Tottenham or playing for Liverpool
or
whatever
else.
Or if
he's 21 or if he's 27.
Yeah, exactly right. You play who are playing well. You play the players who are playing well. Now, Marcus Rashford scored a double this morning and he started. But why wasn't Tammy Abraham playing? That is my. That's just one of the things. When
I'm
saw
sure
the team sheet,
Gareth Southgate has his reasons.
But I just
there
think
are smarter people than us putting the team together.
You play the players that are informed. In any sport, you just got to play the guy. Sometimes they need
that
a
is
bit
true.
Of a,
that
need
is
to have
true.
The fire lit underneath them. Need to understand. Hey, like you need to go down to come back up. Like you made the call to drop Mason Mount after a poor game last week, and it paid dividends. So with sort of those decisions and just giving some other guys opportunities, it might be the best for England.
And it has been fantastic this season in the Premier League. It might have been the best thing that ever happens to Chelsea, that transfer ban, because they've unearthed some brilliant players.
There's a whole heap of them. There's a whole heap of them.
Like, and they might just put them in a position where they're playing European football when many people thought
make top four.
That they wouldn't. Many people thought that they might not even finish in the top six, or they thought that sixth was where they sat under Frank Lampard in his first season in charge. But it is a long season, and if you've got young players who can run all day,
there's a whole heap of
looking up.
There's a few players in particular to keep an eye on, and one of them is Tammy Abraham, the other one being Mason Mount. But they've unleashed Fikayo Tomori and Reece James as well. So those four, and including Callum Hudson-Odoi, who we did see last year, when Ruben Loftus-Cheek returns just a little bit later this season, and you see all those guys come together, it is going to be very, very exciting for Chelsea fans. I've spoken to a lot of Chelsea fans out there, and all of them have said the same thing to me, that literally they, even though they're not winning every week, the excitement is through the roof. There are
positives.
Do you know what they're... We probably shouldn't talk about the other sport, but they're almost like Carlton fans. Like, they're up and about because they're optimistic about the future. The future's bright.
I think,
you know?
Chelsea have a lot more reason
I think
to be excited than Carlton.
We're not going to talk about
Carlton.
We're
not going to go into
but,
that.
But, as we said, Tammy Abraham, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Fikayo Tomori, Reece James, Mason Mount, Callum Hudson-Odoi leading the charge. This is going to be a very solid Chelsea team that once the transfer ban lifts up, they can go out and just sprinkle around the edges with some other players they can bring in from overseas. So that will really help them out going in the long run.
Nick, we will get to all the Premier League later in the week. We have almost run out of time here today. A big thank you to Steven Nugarkovic, who joined us from the Newcastle Jets. He said that the Jets are as fit as he's ever seen them, and he feels he himself is as fit as he's ever been. He's only 25. He's had two fantastic seasons. He is one of the most underrated players in the A-League. He's a sensational central midfielder. I think he could well and truly be in line for a Socceroos call-up if he continues.
No reason why he can't. He just needs to be given the opportunity. The opportunity arises for Mr. Nugarkovic. I'm sure that he will really reap the rewards of just being part of the setup in itself. It would be good for him, and hopefully get some minutes within these qualification campaigns. A long qualification campaign. Don't want to take any disrespect towards those other sides that they're playing at the moment, but this is probably the best chance that he would have to get some minutes, considering right now that the Socceroos are quite stacked in the middle of the park at the moment. So it'd be good to see that eventually.
Well, it's a good problem to have. That
it's
if,
a great
if you have a lot
problem
of good
to have,
players.
But if you're Steven Nugarkovic, who's struggling to get in and get a look in at now 25, when you've got those players ahead of him, it'd be very frustrating because I think he's done everything right. It's just a matter of waiting for that right opportunity. I think it's going to come. Just got to keep persisting. And it's going to come for him. So just a reminder, tomorrow morning, 5:45 a.m., if you're getting up early, you're on your way to work, and you want to catch some football, make sure you do. Big European qualifiers on Optus Sport. Switzerland versus Ireland and Sweden versus Spain, the pick of the bunch, which are huge, huge contests with a lot of ramifications in the final stakes heading into that final match day in November as to who will qualify for Euro 2020, which is going to be a very special tournament played all over Europe, not in one country. All over Europe.
And that's sensational. The semi-finals and finals will be at Wembley.
Yep.
But I think the competition kicks off in Rome.
Yep. At the Stadio Olimpico.
How has it been so long? How has England not hosted a World Cup since 1966?
When was the last time they actually hosted a major tournament?
It's been a long time.
I don't know how they haven't. It's really, really befuddling. Like, you would have thought they would have hosted at least one.
I know you have to share it around.
Yeah. But still, like, it's England. Like, England surely should have
they had a strong bid for 2018, and Russia put on a fantastic show, but I think it needs to go back to England sooner rather than
eventually
later.
It will, but I think that it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the competition expands and England not having...
And they're not on the best of terms with FIFA,
not
England.
Not really. And there's a lot of other political jargon that we don't talk about. Like, I hear the word Brexit, and I totally switch off just straight away. Head down, fall asleep.
They're almost like how the IOC give the Olympics to Greece every 100 years.
Yeah, but in your opinion, the Olympics should be in Greece every time around.
I think it'd be fantastic. It'd help the economy.
Of course it would help the economy. Anything would help the economy over in Greece at the moment. But look, it's almost time for us to say goodbye tomorrow morning from 8 a.m.
The War Room.
The War Room, yep, we'll be answering all the big topics. We'll have a full review as well of the Socceroos.
Who are they playing? Chinese Taipei.
Taipei. Not to pie, not to pie. Taipei. I'm going to get that stuck in my head for tomorrow.
I'm going to have that printed on my forehead.
Taipei. Taipei. So think about it. You're paying for money for it to buy a tie. You put it the other way around.
Okay, got you.
There you go. So it's like, you know, decent sort of stuff. But it's time for us to go here on Breakfast on FNR. Back again tomorrow from 8 a.m. Miss any of the show, any of the interviews, head over to our Wooshka or SoundCloud a little bit later to catch up with all of that. But for myself, Victor Byron and Athos Syrianos, it is goodbye for now.
Off the crossbar! And it doesn't go in!
Up like a salmon, a spawning salmon.
Oh, 30 to 1. I don't see you or Robbie on it.
You love rainbows and ponds and things like that. The morning mist. It's what it sounds like, Speedy.
You're listening to Breakfast on FNR. Football Nation Radio.